morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm really happy to be here. A little playful today because I have a theme for my Sunday morning message that is highly unusual, never before done in the history of the science of mind, maybe. But I'm going to talk about food this morning. And the title of my message is Everything is Food. And as I suggested, it comes from that great Popeye movie that was out in the 70s. If you have no idea about the Popeye movie, you should see if you can find it on, you know, Amazon Prime or Netflix or something. It's so, so beautiful. Robin Williams played Popeye, and who's that? Shelley Duvall plays Olive Oil, and oh my goodness, they do such a gorgeous job. And it's a musical, and the music is just fun and lively. So I just pass that along to you. It's a family favorite in our house. My kids grew up, we sang the music, and we watched the movie a lot, and it was great, great fun. But I want to talk to you about food. Are you getting hungry yet? Are you wondering what on earth are we going to do with a topic like food? What I really plan to do today is talk to you about more than just eating and more than the idea of food and even more than the idea of food for thought, although certainly that's all a part of it. But we're going to really look at the sort of spiritual application or the universal principle behind food in a way that you may not have considered before. So if you leave here this morning thinking that I gave you a lesson in how to eat, you'll be mistaken. This has nothing to do with your own personal relationship with food. I'm tying it in a really spiritual way, and I'm actually rather excited about everything that I have come here to say today. One of the things that happened for me all week while I anticipated such a funny topic and a fun-filled topic is that I kept thinking of that biblical passage that says, eat, drink, and be merry. Remember that one? Eat, drink, and be merry. Did you know that actually came out of the Bible? Some people may not know that unless you have a biblical background. Do you know what the next line says? Because tomorrow you might not be exactly where you are today. So you should eat, drink, and be merry today. So I wanted to put some light on that. And of course, for me, it always begins with some research. So I went back and I found that eat, drink, and be merry part comes from 1 Corinthians. And so what it means is that it was a part of a letter that the Apostle Paul was writing to the Corinthians. So think of it as like the very early Christians who were really persecuted for having such different views about religion. And Paul writes this letter as these words of encouragement and how to deal with all the ups and downs that they're facing as being persecuted Christians trying to bring this new faith into the world. But as I dug deeper, I saw that Paul was really quoting from an Old Testament scripture, which happens a lot, but you have to know the Old Testament in order to feel the connection, to sense the connection. A lot of people of Jewish faith are more aware of that than people who are raised in a more Christian understanding of spirituality. And so the original quote is taken from something that King Solomon said. And so it was in similar circumstances. King Solomon was trying to help the people, remember why this wise one, he's trying to help the people make sense of why bad things happen to good people and good things seem to happen to bad people. When it doesn't look like, when you feel like you're just trying to be a good person and then you encounter challenging circumstances in life. And so what he said was that you have to look at the whole picture. You look at the bigger picture, and he had an emphasis on showing that it's important to sort of practice being in the now, in the present moment, and so you can see how eat, drink, and be merry, because tomorrow you don't know what's going to happen. I also tie in that idea that King Solomon is the one who scribed the idea of in the book of Ecclesiastes, for everything there is a season. So it looks sort of like that whole writing is this good advice on how to live and look at the whole of life. So some Bible scholars claim that Solomon was trying to say, consider that the good times that where you can eat together and enjoy each other's company, consider that as a compensation from God for your struggles. But see, I don't really care for that interpretation. That's kind of old religion, isn't it? And we in New Thought like to always position ourselves to hear that same old material from a new perspective. And so for me, and this is what my whole message is about this morning, is that there's really wisdom in understanding that we are created with this God-given ability to enjoy life, you know, to be able to appreciate things. And I think that's where we understand beauty. And if I'm looking at food, how delicious food can taste and how you can savor it in the moment. So these old biblical authors are really talking about a term that we use today, which is mindfulness. Mindfulness is currently the most popular form of meditation, and I think it has such large appeal because it has been presented to us in a non-religious fashion. So anybody can practice mindfulness. We can move through our life with this sort of easy meditation practice. You don't even have to call it meditation if that bothers you. But to date, as of right about now, although this information might be a year or two old, but there are about 4,000 documented studies on how mindfulness brings us into a better emotional balance in living our lives. And I would say that, that in New Thought, we have been promoting mindfulness long before we were using that term in a way that it's sort of common to hear it today. Mindfulness, as a practice, began in the late 60s and the early 70s, primarily through the work of Jon Kabat-Zinn. Have you heard that name before? He should get more kudos than he does, because he did a really good work in documenting research and what it turns out. I was a little surprised to learn this myself, but he was a practicer of Buddhist meditation, particularly Vipassana. Vipassana is a meditation practice. We actually teach it in our foundation class, and it has these universal features. It comes from Buddhism. But it has these universal features of paying attention, of being an observer, of sitting quietly and breathing and just noticing the in-breath and the out-breath, and that there's always a next breath. And that while you're breathing and just being mindful and noticing, that your thoughts will move and that there's nothing wrong with that. You just notice that we have thoughts that move around, that get our attention, and that you just simply bring your attention back to the breath. And then from Vipassana, we also, Jon Kabat-Zinn took this idea that there are ways we can learn to sit quietly and notice where we hold tension in our body, and that we can practice consciously relaxing those parts of our body that are tense. And then, of course, there's that gorgeous element of just savoring the moment, right? Living in the now, the present moment, having a witness consciousness, we say sometimes. And so included in that would be savoring every bite of food that you put into your mouth. That would be a mindfulness practice, wouldn't it? And so there's this gorgeous way that we can see when I use that term, I kept thinking about this, that term, food for thought. If you are practicing savoring what you are eating, you are using food for thought. You are having thoughts about the food that you are eating, and you're practicing being in the moment and doing that very consciously. And so that's what this is all about. That's what this teaching is really speaks to, and where I want to dive in today. So it's not just about eating, but more than that, it's not just about eating in order to sustain your life or promote growth or provide energy to your physical body. Yes, all of those things make a difference. You know, if we nourish ourselves well, then we have a higher level of enthusiasm for life, or so it seems. But it's more than that. And what I'm suggesting today is that we throw in the idea that it can be also enjoyable. And not only that it can be, but I think it's possible it should be an enjoyable experience. So what I want to talk to in terms of spiritual principle, where I want us to look at today, is that there could be a joyful reverence in the way that we eat. Are you with me? Okay. Getting hungry? So I want to give you a little background so I can give you a story that will help you see where I'm coming from and hopefully help you maybe be a little more personal in your own application of what's about to be said. So I was a young woman. Well, weren't we all, except for you men? You were young. We were all young ones, we know that. And I was in my 20s. I was pregnant most of my 20s. I'll say I had 4 children, so I was always pregnant or breastfeeding, and then I became a childbirth educator, so I'm teaching about all of that. And included in my training was a segment of teaching women about healthy eating. Now, this really appealed to me because personally, I think that, I don't know that I was always conscious about what I ate. I don't know that I was always awake and aware about what I was eating growing up, or that it even mattered to me. But as a pregnant woman, I was really clear that there was something important I wanted to do for that child that was developing in me. So I was really into knowing the best that I could know, and feeding myself well, and believing that I was growing babies with healthy bodies and bones and circulation systems and all of that, and that really influenced me. So what I want to say is it was easy in my 20s, sort of arena or way of looking at it, to focus on all this. Now, in addition to that, in the 1970s, we had like Adele Davis, who was like the guru of healthy eating of that time. How many of you know of Adele Davis? How many remember Adele Davis? I don't hardly hear her name anymore. I studied people like Penny C. Royal, who was the big person that introduced us in an understandable way to herbology. We studied reflexology in my childbirth education training. We studied how to do muscle testing to determine what foods that your body could tolerate and not tolerate. And I took all of that and I created my own sort of theory and my own way of raising children and feeding my family and all of that. And what I understood it to be was that there is a way that we can learn to listen to our bodies. So if you're doing muscle testing, if you don't know what kinesiology is or muscle testing, there are people here who do. Raise your hand if you're experienced at kinesiology, muscle testing, and all of that. Yeah, so talk to these people afterwards. Some of them probably are certified in teaching and training and offering services in all of it. But what I learned was that, yes, there's a way my body knows. I could hold a piece of banana in my hand, and my arm would get really weak, and I understood that during this pregnancy, bananas don't agree with me. And it was true. That it was the only thing that really made me not feel comfortable. And I thought bananas were good for me. But during this particular pregnancy, I couldn't eat them. In time, because of the practice and my commitment to it and my conviction for learning how to listen to my body, I learned that I didn't even have to do the muscle testing, that I could just think about the food, imagine it in my mouth. What do we know now about the practice of visualization? The brain studies tell us that the brain really believes it's had that encounter already. And I could then also imagine what I would feel like. Should I eat it or should I not eat it? And it just kind of became a pattern that I used in the rest of my life. This is not to say that I eat healthy all the time. It's to say that I believe there's a way that all of us can intuit what we should eat and what we shouldn't eat. And it might be as simple as saying, if pizza upsets you, maybe you shouldn't eat it. Or eat a small slice instead of two or three big slices, right? So there's some common sense. There's some reasoning in there that we can learn. And I call it, in part, listening to your body. And I love that I got to teach pregnant women this, because then I believed they had the same opportunity to pass on this wisdom to their children and thus, help us have a way to reason with this God-given inner wisdom that we all have. So in life, in spiritual practice, I teach that if you find yourself in an uncomfortable situation, that you should stop, breathe, and make a different choice, right? Or choose, because you're stuck, you're upset maybe because you're not making a decision and you need to. And I would say the same is true in eating, that there's this simple process that before I eat, you can stop, you can think about it, you can imagine it, you can breathe, and then choose what it is that you desire to do. But it's not about food. It's bigger than food. It's about the reverence and the joy. So now, given all of that, I would say that I think about it this way. Holmes was born in the late 1800s. The people he studied were born previous to that, and they all wrote from some space within of knowing. It's this wisdom I'm talking about, that inner wisdom, right? So they wrote, they did their research, they collected data, they presented ideas based on simply knowing and by trying out in their own life the things that they were experimenting with in their own experience of living. Today, we live in a time where we have more than just that inner knowing. And in some ways, I think that that's why we don't intuit as much as we used to, because we can go to the internet and look something up, right? We get the head knowledge, and then that seems to satisfy us. But we live in a time now where we can know how and we can know why, and then we can look to have an understanding of what I'm talking about today is sort of the body-mind connection, isn't it? This is the holy ground of living in the physical world in the most basic way. So we have documented research. We have spiritual-minded researchers, scientists. We live in a time where, oh my gosh, you can pick up a book by Joe Dispenza or Bruce Lipton or Greg Braden or a long list of others, Amit Goswami, and you can now look at the evidence that's coming. Now, it's nice to have that, but don't forget that we can also intuit truths for ourselves individually. And especially if you're talking about food, we each have a different body and we each have different needs. In the same way that I gave you that illustration of a food I could eat in this pregnancy, but then I could not eat in that pregnancy, there are changes that happen with us. So being conscious and choosing will keep us always pointed in that direction where we are, I like to say, divinely guided to the highest and the best choices for our life. Holmes said this in that wonderful book, Can We Talk to God? And the answer is, oh, good. You are here. Good. I'm so glad. Holmes said, there's this fabulous quote. I think it's one of my favorite recent quotes. And that means you'll hear me say it a couple of times on Sundays in the future. We are chemists in the laboratory of life. We are chemists in the laboratory of life. So what shall we produce? What shall we produce? Well, isn't it fabulous. We each get to decide that question on our, the answer to that question from our very own sort of point of inquiry, that point of entrance. So it depends on what do you want. And the question then is, what do you want? And then I always find that when somebody asks me, what do you want? And if it's something, you know, sometimes you could get lost in that. I don't know. That's the problem. I don't know what I want. Well, let's say that I knew I wanted to have a spiritual perspective on wellness. I'm going to use this as the illustration. So if I know I want wellness, then I'm going to be spiritually guided and directed, because intentionally I'm going to be looking for things that will point me in choice making, where I will have knowledge about the beneficial things I can do in my own life, so that I will have a high state of well-being as I walk through my experience of living, because that's what I want, right? Or I want to have an experience of well-being for as long as possible. Some people really want to be 100 years old. I don't, but I know that lots of people do. And you can do that today. I mean, we are meeting people all the time in advanced years that have very clear minds and are very independent in the way that they live their lives. Right? And those are the people I like to focus on. How? What does that? I would say that is food for thought. And it's more than what they eat, because let's face it, you know, there's always that farmer out in Indiana somewhere that eats, six eggs and a half a pound of bacon every day and smokes, and they live to be 100. It's like, I don't know. So we have to be careful that we don't put our biases, notice there are some biases in all of that, around what we think that means to live to be advanced in years. So it's a mindset. I like to say, how can I bring love into my practice of wellness? What does that make you think? How do you bring love into your practice of wellness? Well, you have to quit looking at what's not right, or thinking that you need to be better than you are in some way, and you come from a totally different beginning. You come from a place of love. What does it feel like to love this physical body? So what does it feel like to eat food that you know your body loves? Well, it feels pretty good. What are your favorite foods to eat that make you feel good, that don't leave you with an after feeling of, oh, I wished I hadn't done that? What are those other foods? So I was thinking that, you know, for me, it's like I love about twice a week I make a giant salad for me and Hugh. Giant salad. And I like to put everything I can think of eating in it, in anything that's tasty. And I love to combine some weird tastes and try different things all the time. So what needs to be in it, now I'm talking from my perspective, what needs to be in it to make it such a wonderful salad? Well, it has to have some substance, right? Substance and supply. Let's start with the God stuff. Substance and supply. For me, substance means it's got to have a little protein in it. And sometimes I personally don't get all my protein out of beans. Like, what do you call garbanzo beans before they're garbanzo? Chickpeas. I could not think of that. Thank you very much. Sometimes I just know that I need that substance if I want to feel the way I want to feel later. I absolutely need in a delicious salad, it has to be pretty. Right? It has to be colorful. It has to be tasty. It has to have texture. It has to be pleasing aesthetically. Really, think about it. It has to have qualities that are qualities of beauty and of pleasure. It has to be delicious. I want lots of flavor. That's where loving cilantro comes in really handy, because a little cilantro in a salad makes it taste completely different. Or a seasoning I haven't used in a salad before, it's really fun to grab something out. And then I eat for the pleasure of it. So there's a way in which we can move through our life and have that joyous reverence. Can you feel, as I'm talking about the salad, can you feel a joyous reverence? I want you to notice that the description of a simple salad are the qualities of God. Why not? Why wouldn't we expect to have that experience in the way that we eat? Listen to what Ernest Holmes had to say about it. Would you believe Ernest Holmes wrote about food? In the Science of Mind textbook on page 259, it's a whole section he entitled Thoughts About Food. And he had some interesting things to say about it. I'm about to tell you. This is where it gets good. Food must be a spiritual idea. It must be an idea of substance and supply. Whatever our individual physical system needs to make it harmonious, whatever your unique body needs to make everything function in a harmonious way, what you need individually, intelligence, the infinite wisdom of the universe will guide you to it. But we cannot expect to have our food agree with us if we are constantly condemning it. I was stunned to read that statement in the textbook. You cannot expect your food to agree with you if you are condemning it, if you are finding fault in it, if you are not appreciating it. You know, maybe that's where blessing our food before we eat, maybe that's where that originates, in that way that we're willing to see something gorgeous about it. So I'm not talking about eating better. I want you to really get that. I'm not telling you you're not doing it good enough or right. What I'm saying is, what if we could apply the golden rule in such a way in our lives that we even related to our food on the premise of the golden rule? So the golden rule, love God and love your neighbor. Love, love, love. We practice acceptance and forgiveness and that consciousness that allows us to connect in a very personal way. So when we eat together, when we break bread together, which comes from that idea that originally it was a loaf that you would pull off a piece and pass it to your neighbor, that's where we pull in these ideas of connection, because it becomes a communion. We have an informal experience of Holy Communion every Sunday right here in this spiritual center. It's how we are called together in fellowship. And so we don't find fault with the food. In fact, usually we're pretty pleased with what food shows up through our doors. But I would say that applying the golden rule in general is asking us to practice love without condemning or passing judgment on anything or anyone else. So when you think of food, in general, I want you to see in a generality, in a big general way, when you think of food and you notice you have opinions in all kinds of ways around food, I would invite you to notice if you're blaming or condemning in any way. So I think what this is saying is you can't blame the farmers, don't blame the ranchers, don't blame the government, don't blame your mom, don't blame your genes, and don't blame it on your metabolism if you don't like how your body looks. Bless your food, right? Bless the abundance of food spreading around this planet so that people don't have to go to bed hungry. Put a blessing on this idea of food, generally speaking. And most of all, do not make your decisions around eating based on fear. I think that's a really big invitation, and I think that's what Holmes was speaking to before we had simplified it to looking at the idea of love-based decisions versus fear-based decisions, because a lot of people, a lot of us are so trying to preserve our lives that we miss the whole point of the present moment, you know, eat, drink, and be merry. We miss that, and we think we're in it. We're only looking at longevity, and we don't pull ourselves out of that place of judgment and condemning, and I think we do it easily when it comes to things like food. You know, notice when I described my delicious salad to you, I did not include in that description, I eat because I have to. See, for me, that changes it. Then it's no longer fun. I can't see beauty in it. I can try all day long, but if I think I'm doing it because I have to eat well, because there's something attached to that, then I'm not in the present moment. And I think there's a way we can live our life more richly in the present moment. This made me laugh three times today. Something happened in the preceding me getting up here and speaking to you. And one was where that whole I am thing, I forget how that happened now. But I wanted to talk to you about, do you remember being in elementary school? How many of you had the privilege of eating from a cafeteria in elementary school? Yeah, I remember 35 cents, quarter and a dime, and then one day it went up to 50 cents when I got like the fourth or fifth grade. It was 50 cents to go through that line. And so you would wait, and sometimes that line would be really long because the whole class would come out and you'd be standing there. And I don't remember people taking their lunch. It seems to me everybody got in line to buy their lunch. But once in a while, they would have spinach as the vegetable. You couldn't choose. You got spinach on your plate, and you could smell it before you got in there, right? Do you remember that? So what's your memory of cafeteria spinach? Call some things out.
Yucky.
Yucky. What else? Say it again.
Putrid.
Disgusting. It wasn't pretty. It didn't smell good. It probably came out of a can. And they gave it to little kids like we should like it. You know, there's just something strange about all of that. And so, say it again. Well, that's where I'm going. Thank you very much. That was my next line. So if you now think Popeye, what was the message of Popeye? You know, I don't like it. I don't want to eat it. I don't like it. But it's good for you. And if you eat it, you have big muscles, right? Right? So I'm strong to the finish because I eat my spinach. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. Toot, toot. All right? So now you have a comparison. Now I want you to see what I'm talking about when I talk aesthetically pleasing. Our food can be aesthetically pleasing. We have some choices here. Your food can be tasty, and your food should be the way you desire it to be, and nobody understands the uniqueness of your God-given body better than you. And if you don't understand it, then I suggest that you meet with a muscle tester and find out what foods your body doesn't want to eat anymore, because they will tell you, probably for a fee, but it may be worth it, who knows. So moving on, Holmes also said on that same page regarding thoughts about food. This is so interesting. And again, it's his view. It is a mistake to believe that either fasting or feasting will advance your spiritual well-being. Food does not harm people, but we dishonor God when we fear it. See, I know you can argue some of the points in here, but I don't want you to miss that last statement. We dishonor God when we fear food. That's why we have so much, so many eating disorders. That's why I'm going to say this, and I'm just going to say this, but you know, there are so many podcasts right now of really well-researched people that are trying to sell you a product or a book or something. And they're telling you, they hook you in. I know this because I've watched at least two of them, probably almost to the end. 15, 20 minutes I get hooked in. Because it's that place where you click, the advertisement comes up and it says, doctors say this is one food you should avoid. Right? Well, I want to know. I want to know what the one food is. So you watch the podcast, but it takes 12 or 15 minutes before they tell you what the doggone food is that you shouldn't eat no more. Meanwhile, you're hooked, and then I know. And I'm telling you, everyone I've watched, it's a different food that you shouldn't eat or a combination of two or three things that you shouldn't eat. And what I want to say is we dishonor God when we choose out of fear. We should practice the golden rule here. Why do we have to pick on tomatoes? They didn't do anything wrong. They saved a lot of sailors, you know. If you don't like them, don't eat them because they probably aren't good for you, and that's why you don't like them, right? And vice versa. If you eat them and you feel good when you eat them, then your body knows how to do that. There are no experts that know everything for everybody. And I would believe them a lot more if they didn't have a pricey product at the end of the whole thing. But they start, and this is what's wrong with the world, is they start on a premise. And they assume you believe the premise, and so they start with this faulty or corrupt reasoning. And that's I mean, thank goodness we at least call it fake news now. We're becoming more aware that everything we see isn't necessarily actual. But the bottom line is there's always another way of looking at all of this stuff. So I wanted to close out this morning by sharing with you the passage from Ecclesiastes, the biblical passage where King Solomon wrote the original words. However, I'm reading it from Eugene Peterson's translation of Scripture to make it contemporary and I think aesthetically pleasing in a wordy sort of a way. It comes from the fifth chapter of Ecclesiastes. After looking at the way things are on the earth, here's what I've decided is the best way to live. He's going to help the people. Here's what I've decided. Wise king, he's going to share his words. Take care of yourself. Have a good time and make the most of whatever job you have for as long as God lets you live. And that's about it. Yes, we should make the most of what God gives us, both the bounty and the capacity to enjoy it. That's a God-given gift. Accepting what's given and delighting in the work, this is God's gift. God deals out joy in the present moment, in the now. It's useless to brood over how long you might live. God gives both the bounty and the capacity to enjoy. We spend way too much time condemning instead of blessing. And I think we've become afraid of disease because we've condemned so many, many things. But dis-ease can be thought of differently. What if we thought of dis-ease as just information that invites us to make adjustments in our life? Isn't that gorgeous? Isn't that a simple idea? There's something about us that's perfect and whole and complete and desires to be expressed in our life. It expresses best through the exuberance and the reverence of joy. It's food for thought. So think. And at this time, I'd like to anchor these words in prayer, and so I would invite the practitioners and the ministers to stand and circle the room. Thank you. Lots of food for thought. The wisdom of Popeye. The beauty of the gifts of God, the bounty. We just breathe that all in right now. Because right where we are is the fullness of God itself. It is that power and that presence that is greater than we are. It is a power for good. It is love. And we can use that power. We can use that love. We can shift our vision and stand in that place of receiving our good. I feel the love of God within me. And I know it is that movement of life, that quickening of that divine energy. It is that very activity of life that reminds us yet again that there is something absolutely divine in the way that we are created. And so that every cell, every atom, every molecule, every muscle, the skin, the bone, every part of our body, the organs, there's an intelligence that thrives on that perfect knowing, on that revealing of the wholeness and the perfection and the circulation and movement of this divine life. And so we stand in that truth. We stand in such a way that we can see there is spiritual principle in absolutely every fragment of our living. And how wonderful it is to recognize again that we are given this natural inborn capacity for joy and for appreciation and for blessing. And so we take a stand this day to rejoice, to see the good, to talk about the good, to declare it, to claim it, to eat it, to have it in every way, an experience of our fullness and our own individualized divine expression. And so something shifts within us, and we are standing in that perfect alignment. It is that spiritual chiropractic moment where everything comes together in perfect alignment. And that divine energy moves and flows and lives in that divine circulation of our own individual being. It expresses from us. It becomes a part of our experience and something that we give back to the world. I feel that love, and I know it is the greatest force in the universe. So wherever there is any experience, where there is any appearance of dis-ease or something out of order, we simply stand back, we breathe, and we choose again and allow that divine guidance to point to us, to guide us, to show us the beauty and the perfection in this given moment, this God-given moment now. So I say, thank you, God. I sense the healing impact of this reasoning, these words. And where I think I have seen imperfection, I know that this blessing changes that perception so that the divinity is revealed, so that we may stand before each other in that namaste posture, recognizing the glory of God before us always. And so in that spirit of deep, deep gratitude, I simply feel that movement of thankfulness. And I release it into the law, knowing that it is absolutely fulfilled in the most positive and perfect way imaginable. And together we say, and so it is. Amen. Amen.